Yeah, we're just kind of moving along.
Good.
So what are we talking about?
Well, I wanted to relate an experience I had this weekend. Some of you may have seen it on the front page of the newspaper this weekend was an article about a young lady who died in a car accident, actually died in the hospital as a result of a car accident. Mm. Her memorial service was this weekend on Saturday. And knew the girl and her family. And went to the funeral, and this girl was a foster kid and had been in many foster homes and had, you know, a pretty horrible life, abused and hurt and rejected. And this family took her in, Christian family, and they loved her for real. They loved her unconditionally. They gave her boundaries and they told her there were rules, and they struggled through those fights. And this girl, from what I understand from the service, you really struggled with that. You know, there were the times where she'd leave the house and not come back. And but they kept keeping on with her and kept loving her and kept holding on and kept encouraging her and kept praying with her and kept, you know, kept coming to church, kept meeting.
.us.
Yep, we're rolling. That's right. We rolled Nish out and we rolled Patrick in. And we went from caffeine to just straight inline sugar right here, folks, this morning. Anyway, Patrick Doyle's with us. He's a local area counselor here taking your phone call.
Resistant to the authority.
Resistant to love. Resistant to authority.
Boundaries and all that.
Resistant. Just in general. And when you've been a survivor, and, you know, I know there's many out there listening who are survivors, who their lives, you know that it's you and you alone you can count on, because no one else is going to take care of you. Mm-hmm. Or, and if they're, not only they're not going to take care of you, they may take you out if they get a chance. Right. So, you know, that process of becoming a survivor makes you very resistant to love, because you have to be in charge. Love means a certain level of vulnerability. Love means a certain level of openness.
Trust.
Trust, yes. Risk, okay? When you're a survivor, that's not going to happen. I grew up in a family where it was alcoholic and dangerous. And so one of the things I learned as a kid is you never take a risk. You do everything you can to avoid that. You make sure that you're okay. You don't ever let anybody in, because that's too dangerous. It's too unsafe. So when we have that in our lives, it translates to God. And so at the service, I heard a lot of testimony about how this girl struggled with that process of letting God in, of receiving his love. God used a real human family to help her see that it's possible for somebody to love her. Now, there was a message that we all get from being in a bad situation, but we're not working at that. In how you behave. So one of the ways that we know somebody has that message in their head is because they behave in a self-destructive manner. Okay? So self-destruction doesn't mean necessarily the guy who's on Skid Row. Self-destruction can mean, the workaholic, or the person who never takes the risk to improve themselves because they're too scared it won't work out. And they stay in a bad job for most of their life. That's self-destructive behavior. Now, you got to remember something. Self-destructive behavior goes against one of the most powerful forces on the face of the earth, and that being the force of survival. You've heard the story about the guy who gets his arm stuck in the rock climbing and saws his arm off and walks 8 miles to the hospital. You know, that's a strong, powerful force right there. Right. You know, somebody comes across a car accident, and with superhuman strength at that moment, they're able to lift the car up to get the person out. Mm-hmm. You know, so when we do what is self-destructive, it goes against the very nature of survival.
You know, when you hear stories like this, and they're sad.
They are.
Very sad. Very sad, and especially to have a life that was so traumatized and mm-hmm. struggle, and yet to find genuine love, and then all of a sudden that life is taken out.
That's right.
Those are hard ones. I don't know how you explain that. I mean, I don't know how. Those are just hard. They're
right.
Just hard. There's no word you can find to make all that just kind of disappear.
Nope.
But of all, how old was she?
17.
That fits right in where I wanted to go, and that is, the question is being asked today: what is it that young people want more than anything else on the face of the earth? Can you answer that question?
Well, I know what I think it is. You know, I think it's not just teenagers, it's not just young people, it's everybody who's ever been born. What we deeply desire is an intimate connection with God and other people. It's what I call God with skin on. Mm-hmm. Another person who I can trust, who I know loves me. And even if there's mistakes made, those are dealt with. And I feel a safety that isn't movable. When you have that, things totally radically change internally, because you start to really realize the value that God has placed on you, his child. I mean, think about it. So valuable are we that God thought it was worth dying for.
Mm-hmm.
But most people, while they understand that intellectually, in their heart, they don't accept that. They're still out there running around like a chicken with their head cut off trying to make God happy. And God's like, I'm happy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm perfect. I don't need anything. I'm good. You know, and the cross was complete. My wrath that was intended for you has been satisfied in Christ. No longer is it even here. It's satisfied. I poured it all out. And so, but that's a radical idea for somebody who doesn't feel like they're worthy of love.
Well, yeah, parents that are struggling, somewhere the disconnect between them and their child takes place.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that as kids get into teenagehood and puberty mm-hmm. and all of those things, there is that natural breaking away. There's that natural the expression of independence.
Yep.
And in order to be independent, they got to break free from their parents.
Right.
But they gravitate to somebody else that just gives mm-hmm. them all the lies.
Right.
And parents are really frustrated. I mean, here's a 17-year-old girl. I mean, her life probably could be multiplied by millions.
Mm-hmm. Probably.
You know, which is sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you know, and people can't find this intimate relationship. I was listening to Rick Warren yesterday. I mean, the guy, at times, he's just brilliant. And he was talking about this very subject, and that mm-hmm. is that how we all wear masks.
Yeah.
And what people really want is authenticity.
That's right.
That's what kids are looking for.
Yeah, and they can smell something other than authenticity from 10 miles off.
Yeah, they have a better sense about that than we do. I mean, they can see phoniness quicker than we can.
But they can't see it so much in each other as much as they can in adults. Because as an ex-youth worker, I used to see a lot of kids doing a lot of stuff to each other, and it's like, why? How come? You know, if adult tried that, it'd be like, no way, dude.
Yeah.
But they give each other, you know. They're desperate for acceptance from each other much more than they are from adults. But here's part of the deal, and this is one of the things that I think happens for parents as kids grow up. Look, all of us come to the table of parenting with our own set of fears. You know, whatever we experience. I know I have a deep fear that my kids will get into drugs, because that's what happened to me. So, you know, I'm scared spitless of that, and I have to keep that before God a lot, okay? Because what I don't want to do is become a parent who parents out of fear. Because when I do that, as the kid gets older, they are going to know, hey, this is not about me. This isn't about my dad caring about me. This is about him being freaked out about what he's scared about. And when they sense that, whether they can articulate it or not, the wall goes up. and now they don't trust you because your motive has nothing to do with them. It's totally selfish. You're self-centered. You're freaked out because you don't want something bad to happen. Now, is it wrong to want nothing bad to happen to your child? No. But how you handle that fear is paramount. And this gets back to what I was talking about. If you have a trust in God that you are going to be taken care of by Him, subsequently so are your kids, even if difficulty ensues, because frankly, difficulty is the only way any of us learn. Mm-hmm. I'm only sitting here as a result of my difficulty. Mm-hmm. If it weren't for that, I'd still be out there doing crazy stuff. So we want to protect our kids from the difficulty. That's understandable. I do too. But it's not realistic. Kids are going to have difficulty. And my hope is that parents can allow their kids in those teen years in a safe environment within the home to fall flat on their face, make the mistake, and learn. Because when they get out of the house, if they haven't learned those basic lessons of how things work, they are going to get annihilated. The difficulty gets much greater at 19, 20, 21 on your own. The consequences of those learning lessons get much greater. So us trying to protect our kids at every turn is not really healthy when they're in their teen years. Now, when they're little kids and they're going to run in front of a bus because they don't know better, that's different. But when they're 16, 15, 17, they need to be making mistakes in a safe environment so that they can learn. Because you know as well as I do, the things that I finally internalized came with a great deal of pain. Yeah. I didn't internalize it intellectually, and then it was all okay. Yeah. I usually had to have some, you know, knock on the head to go, oh, that's why you don't do that. Yeah. You know? And I think that as parents, we have to really
That's a good point. A good point. I mean, kids, how do you help them make a mistake without, you know, overcorrecting or beating them over the head for, you know, doing it.
A lot of times, as a parent, we can see it coming, you know. And this is another thing about having your own intimacy with God, because there's a lot of wisdom involved here. God will give you wisdom. This time, son or daughter, I want you to let them hit the wall. Let them run smack dab into the wall. Let's say, like grades, for example, a kid is failing in school because he's not doing his homework, he's goofing off, he's distracted, he's, you know, doing his whatever, he's too involved in something or whatever, and he's going to fail. Don't go to the school and get all his homework for him. Don't, you know, don't throw the mattress under him right before he hits. Let him get the failing grade. Bang! Now the kid's faced with it. Hey, I didn't give him, as a parent, I didn't give him a failing grade. It's not my fault. Hey, the school gave you a failing grade. What are you going to do about that? See, now what happens is the parent becomes an advisor, not an authoritarian. When the kids get into teen, we start transitioning from, when they're little, we are in complete control because it's necessary.
Yeah, but what's stopping the kid from interpreting your lack of intervention as being unloving?
You don't care. Because what I'm doing is I'm shifting responsibility from me to them. Look, son, I deeply care about you. And if there's anything I can do to help you, I will do it. But I am not doing your work for you. You have to learn to do that now. If you carry this mentality into a job, you're going to fail. So you got to get this squared away. But anything I can do to help you to learn about that, you have questions, you want me to help you with homework? I'll be glad to do that, but you have to have the initiative, son or daughter. You have to have the initiative to take care of this. It's not my initiative. It's your grades, not mine. So when you start putting that responsibility on them, they start learning how to handle it. They have to learn how to discipline themselves to not go hang out with their friends for 2 hours when they really need to do a school report. I mean, how often as an adult did you have to, you know, not do what you wanted to do to take care of your responsibilities? It's a reality of life. So now in their teen years is the time for them to learn it. Not when they're 22, 24, you know, whatever, out on the road. And think about it. In terms of relationship issues, now's the time for them to learn that stuff in a safe environment where they have two people who really deeply love them and are on their side and are not going to reject them because they make a mistake.
The culture in which we live is a very me-oriented culture.
Right.
Everything's about self-satisfaction. Mm-hmm. Self-gratification, And added to that is the sense of urgency, you need it now.
Right.
most advertisements, if properly executed, creates a dissatisfaction that you don't have this, that you need this.
That's right.
Your life isn't complete to have. So it creates a dissatisfaction so that you have to get that.
Right.
But all of this is mounted up to now.
Mm-hmm.
And what's been lost in all of this is endurance and patience, working hard, pacing oneself.
Right.
I mean, if you, we got 2.5 generations on the scene now, raised with a mouse in their hand.
Yep.
Click results, click results, click results.
Right.
Now, all of a sudden, here comes the parents. And the parents are the water on the fire.
Uh-huh.
They're the weight on the ankles.
Mm-hmm.
They are the slowdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Take it easy. Be patient. Mm-hmm. Endure.
Mm-hmm.
They're going against everything that everything else is telling them they ought to do.
Mm-hmm.
So immediately, the parents are categorized as,
right,
you're the bad guy.
Right.
So how do they translate this, what you and I would perceive to be love,
right,
into restriction?
I think it's really how you present it. And here's the deal. Like we said before, kids are highly sensitive. So if they feel like it's out of fear, they will reject it. They will struggle against it. They will dislike it. They will fight with you. If they understand that you are at a certain level of comfort with their uncomfortableness, and actually that it's appropriate, they will take that much better. But when they feel the tension in the parent, they instantly assume that is something wrong with a parent. And 9 times out of 10, that's true. And so what I'm saying is, if you can have your trust put in God for the outcome of your kid, because frankly, he's the one who has it, not us. This is where we as parents have to go back to our intimacy with God and saying, God, I am struggling and I want to tear lips off, or I want to run somebody over, or I want, you know, this is not okay with me. And you might be absolutely right about some issue, but you can be dead right and all alone. So it's not about being right as much as it is about being able to communicate that truth to the kid in a way that he understands. And kids are all different. I mean, the way I would approach my one son would be totally different than the way I'd approach my other one.
I was raised 5 children in our family.
Uh-huh.
I'm the middle. So I have an older brother, sister, and a younger brother, sister.
So you got beat from both sides?
Well, you know. That's why you came out so good. but you
That's
know,
why politics seems
well,
so comfortable.
You know. Kevin Lehman thought for sure I was a firstborn. But anyway, it was great because I ruined his theory on the birth order book. I'm the only guy. I accomplished the impossible.
Okay.
No, but I mean, we're 5 kids. And the family dynamics were pretty, you know, pretty dynamic. I mean, you got 5 different personalities.
Right.
And all the things going on with all of that.
Uh-huh.
And we had our moments of struggle. There's no question about it.
Absolutely.
Typical family. I didn't want to do what they told me to do, and they got mad. And then how come my brother got to do it and I didn't?
Yeah,
and how
exactly.
come, you know, I was always never old enough and always too old. I
mean, right.
Being
exactly.
in the middle, you're just stuck.
Right.
but anyway, long story short is this. I think the missing ingredient to solidifying an intimate relationship is humor.
Mm.
I really do.
Mm-hmm.
I think what kept our family unique was both my mom and dad had an incredible sense of humor.
Uh-huh.
And that somehow overrode the hard stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We were able to laugh at each other, make fun of each other. Not to the point where you were...
Not mean.
Not mean, and you weren't disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there were just some things you just fell on the floor laughing over.
Right. Well, I think what that indicates is there's a certain level of, you know, families can get overly serious.
I mean, if you take the seriousness of whatever this child is doing.
Right.
And then you sprinkle the seriousness of religiosity over the top of it.
Yeah, wow.
I mean, all of a sudden, there's no room here.
Yeah, you got some uptight people.
You really do. And I'm thinking, well, give it a rest, you know, go out and, you know, shoot the skeet or something.
Right. I think there's a lot of wisdom in that, you know, the other thing about being able to laugh at yourself is a certain level of humility. You know, no one here expects perfection. Well, it's not possible. We realize we're going to make mistakes, and sometimes our mistakes are hilarious.
Well, do you know what I remember as a kid more than anything else from growing up was the funny times.
Uh-huh. Right.
Now, I remember getting corrected.
Right.
And yeah, they were hard.
Right.
But the things that I carry on to our kids and grandkids mm-hmm. is the funny things, the dumb things we did in our family. Mm-hmm. Somehow they became traditions.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know? Right. Oh, boy, my kids are quick to remind me.
Uh-huh.
Oh, boy.
About?
Well, you know, one of the things we always say, it only takes 5 minutes, which means it's an all-day project.
So, it would only take 5 minutes, yeah, son. Come on over.
Yeah, it only takes 5 minutes. I only need you for 5 minutes. Come on over. Well, I get that shoved down my throat all the time. Hey, Dad, I'm building the fence. It'll only take 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, but so, the point is that I really think the ingredient and Christian families need to lighten up.
Mm. I think there's a lot of truth in that. And particularly when you talk about being overly religious. And here's the other thing I think really gets in the way and stops that lightness from happening is that, you know, I'm going to make some statements. Have I stepped on some toes? I'm not trying to.
You're going down the word of perfection here.
I'm just walking. I ain't trying to step on toes.
Okay.
But I believe the church puts an undue amount of pressure on parents. And I've seen it a bunch of times if I've seen it once. You know, some parents have a struggle with their teens, and all the other parents in the church start sort of looking over their glasses at them, you know, like, ooh, they got the, you know, bad kid leprosy. We need to move away from them.
Yeah, right.
And the parents feel the judgment, and they feel the intensity of other people's, you know, dissatisfaction. And, you know, I think that's exactly the opposite of what should happen. If in my home group, if one of the kids that are teens of the people that are in my home group, if one of those kids starts to struggle, what I ought to be doing is going to the parents saying, wow, hey, do you think I could take your son to lunch? Do you think I could go hang out? Would it be okay if I met with him, if I just hung out with him? I'd like to see if there's anything I can do.
What a concept.
Yeah. we should be bearing the burden of each other, not shooting at each other with, you did it wrong. Well, hey, I got a news flash. Everybody's done it wrong.
Yeah.
There's nobody who's done it right. Anybody who says they have is lying. You know, read 1 John. But my point here is that we need to be helping each other. And that doesn't mean there aren't times of where I look at the parent and say, you know, I really think this is out of line for you. That's just as loving and supportive as saying, I need to meet with your son. If I meet with their son and he says, you know, my dad is just too hard on me, well, what do you mean? Okay, then I go to the dad and say, you realize he thinks you're too hard on him? The dad may not even know. So what I'm saying is we have to get involved, not push away. And this is the exact example of Christ.
Well, you are the counselor, and you get it up to your eyeballs and this stuff. Now, don't you you obviously see that a lot of parents rule from their own inadequacy.
Yeah.
In other words, they're going to correct what they themselves have failed in.
Yeah, right. Or their parents failed in.
Right. So they're going to lay on this kid perfection.
Right.
You will be perfect from today on. You will not make a mistake. Mm-hmm. You will get all A's, and this is the way it's going to be. And you will go to church, and you will be happy, and you will love God, and you will raise your hands and praise Him. I mean, that's how crazy some of this stuff gets.
And that's why at 19 in college they go crazy.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I'm going to try to wrap this up here, but.
Well, I got to, you know, I tell you what, pastors, turn the radio off. I think some of your dads need to just take your kids, whether son or daughter, just go fishing Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Wake up, you know, have the lunch all ready and have the fishing poles all ready, have the boat ready and the car ready, and they think they're going to get up and go to Sunday school. No, we're going fishing.
You see, and I think something you're talking about, Perry, is very important. Look, the number one goal of parenting is not a good kid, is not a successful businessman, is not a well-educated, well-adjusted citizen. The goal of parenting is to glorify God, which is the goal of all things.
Mm-hmm.
If your goal is to glorify God, then your relationship and your connection with that child is way more important than their outcome. If they get that you see their outcome as your biggest goal, they will know you really don't care about them. What you care about is their outcome. That's not loving them. The scripture says we're to raise a child up in the way that they are to go, not the way we think they should go or what we think they should have or do or be. It's what God has put something in every person as a gift, and it's our job to hone that. The biggest job we have as parents is maintaining a bond with our kids, not developing an outcome.
Yeah, I think there's a point in the relationship, and, you know, I think we all fail as parents.
Oh, absolutely.
Golly, I got an F in it. I sure tried hard.
But, yeah, E for effort.
Well, yeah.
F for attribution.
Yeah, well, there you go. But it's sooner or later you got to be the kid's advocate. I mean, the kids are all alone.
Mm-hmm,
and,
right.
And if mom and dad aren't a safe place,
right.
Then where is a safe place?
Yeah, well, that's why we have all these aberrant youth cultures. Because kids are lacking a bond, so they end up with people in their social system who they put in the position of parents, because the parents, they're not bonded to. They feel rejected. They feel like they can't do it right. And so what they do is they everybody needs a bond. It's absolutely necessary. So if it can't happen at home, they gravitate to something at school or something on the streets, or that's why we have gangs and we have all these subcultures, because the bonding of kids in the homes isn't happening. And part of the reason of that is because we're so busy. Mm. Relationships take time.
Yeah.
And you have to spend time with your kids.
Yeah.
And you have to spend time with your kids on their level, looking in their eyes, not looking past them, waiting for the next thing to happen.
Well, I'm so sorry about this young gal.
Yeah. Glory to God, though, because it was a beautiful testimony, and I kept thinking at the funeral, redemption, redemption, redemption. God took this tragic life, and he brought love into it, and he redeemed what was meant for evil, and a lot of people were touched, and God was glorified in her life. Amazing.
Patrick Doyle, local area counselor, 301-5500, the number to his office. Thanks, Pat.
You bet. Patrick.